was it politics? No. Was it the fact that the Ask an Atheist studio and business office isn't going to be ready until next week, putting my schedule off pretty significantly? No. It was the River Cats Rainiers game in the ninth inning when the River Cats intentionally walked Mangini for bases loaded, and it ended the game 5-4 in a double play. And this is Ask an Atheist, and that is about as much baseball as they'll allow me in the show.
That is correct.
253-584-1480. And with me is Kyle. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
And as usual, Mike, how are you? At least you're honest.
He said it with a smile.
Well, we got some announcements to start the day off. First off, I'd like to take a moment to say happy birthday to show alumnus and the guy I described as the hardest working man in atheism, Jerry. Happy birthday, Jerry.
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Jerry. Jerry is actually the only person I know who sends me birthday cards.
Yeah.
Wow, really?
He is probably the nicest person I know, Jerry Schiffelbein, who wouldn't even interrupt dinner when he was having a heart attack.
That's a true story, but I don't want to embarrass him too much.
Nicest person I know.
Happy birthday, Jerry. Also, I want to give a shout-out to Frank Devlin for being a contributor to the show. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you, Frank. If you want to make a contribution to our show and help us keep us on the air, please go to our website, www.askanatheist.tv. And there's a big button on the left side of the screen.
Exactly. Okay, and then one final thing. It is next week. It is August 6th, correct?
That is correct. Greta Christina will be there.
Right.
At the Seattle Atheists, we'll be hosting Greta Christina, who's going to be discussing the atheism visibility movement and what we can learn from the LGBT movement.
And there will be a panel discussion with Greta Christina, a number of local atheists, mm-hmm. and moderated by Ask an Atheist's own Becky Friedman. And so it'll be a great time. And then once that's over, she's actually going to be on the show next week, correct?
Yes, she's making her second appearance on Ask an Atheist. She appeared with us to talk on a similar subject back on our Scan Public Access days, and she's going to come back again. It'll be a great conversation.
All right, this is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480.
Give us a call if you want to talk about our long, painful afterlife in hell. We'd love to hear from you.
All right, Mike, I've got a... bit of a surprise. Might be time to pack up shop.
Really?
In the little Ask an Atheist shindig we've got going here. We've got a call, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Goes by the name of Mr. Deity.
Mr. Deity? This is big news.
Yeah, big news. Big news. So why don't we go to this call and maybe figure out how exactly we can best pack this thing in.
Mr. Deity, welcome to Ask an Atheist.
Howdy.
So we were kind of wondering, why wait till now to manifest? We've got this radio show going for about a year now, and now you come to us with some evidence of your existence?
Well, I just got up.
that is right. You do rest on Sundays.
Well, it's not just that, but it's that my time is very different from your time. You know, a day for me is 1,000 years for you. So I like to sleep in.
So you're just showing up then?
Well, I'm just waking up.
Yeah. Bit of a long weekend then.
Some people call that showing up. I call it waking up.
So, you're just showing up for us. I have to ask, this is a big question. Why is there so much suffering in the world? Have you been sleeping through that?
Well, you know, these are questions for small mind, really. When you've got the big brain, questions like that seem rather petty. You're not seeing the whole grand scheme of things like I do. And if you did, you know, you would just be embarrassed that you even asked that question right now. It's just silly.
So suffering really isn't that big of a deal.
Not a big whoop, really. I mean, come on. especially when you consider that the real suffering takes place afterwards anyway. If you don't believe the right things, you know, you'd be burned forever. That's suffering. What you guys are going through down there is petty stuff, trust me.
So, yeah, I really have to wonder, if with that kind of bad possible outcome, why not just show up and tell everyone who you are?
Well, you know, that's a good question. That's a fair one from a small mind like your own. But it's still not very, very interesting, again, in the grand theme, because the most important thing is that you believe the right thing. What you do is not really important. But I don't want to tilt the scales here in any way. You know what I mean? I got to be fair to everybody. If I show up to you or your people, you know, and then everybody in your group starts believing me, well, then the other people are going to want to, you know, see me too and get some kind of evidence. You have any idea the lack of free time I would have at that point? I would have to be showing up constantly everywhere to everybody.
I would imagine it's a short step to a mall to mall appearances after that.
Yeah, I got stuff to do. I don't want to be cutting ribbon anywhere.
Right.
Those who know me know that, you know, I enjoy a good game of golf, and you really can't do that if you're having to pop up here and pop up there, and you know.
So golf really is God's your game?
Yes. Except for they don't play it right anymore, because I always make sure to wear the kilt.
Okay. You
really have to do it right if you're going to do it, and they just don't do it anymore.
So
if Tiger Woods had been wearing a kilt, he would not have gotten into the trouble that he got into.
Fair warning.
So I have to wonder, who would be willing to play golf with God? Isn't it just kind of asking to lose?
Well, Zeus is my regular partner.
Oh, Zeus. Wow.
Hades is good, but he cheats. Let's see, who else do I like to hang out with? You know, a lot of you can't do anything with the Indian god, because they're multi-handed, and they just have, you know, it's like I have a terrible handicap if I'm playing against the Indian god. So you don't want to do that. That's no fun.
So really, what it says in the Bible is put no other, you know, gods before you.
Right.
There are other gods, and you play golf with them.
Sure. Yeah.
Wow.
People like to think that I am the god, capital G, and I'm not. I'm a god, small a, small b. There are a whole bunch of guys. This is the only way I was able to put this universe together, because I didn't have the kind of, you know, I don't have the kind of scratch that can throw something like this together all on my own. You have to find a good venture capitalist. Zeus is really the best at that. And he put this small conglomerate together of various gods, Allah, myself, him, a whole bunch of others. And, you know, that's how we got this thing going. But
okay.
For me, the important thing is that, yeah, sure, they're all there and they're great and everything. But when it comes time to worship, I need to be at the top of that, heap.
So you built the universe with a series of subcontractors, you know, deific subcontractors out there just to build the various components of the universe.
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I ended up going with an organic model, just because it required a lot less effort on my part. Didn't have to stay connected, or, you know, I don't like to micromanage.
Well, finally, I have proof. People keep talking to me about agile development models, but really, I think organic is where it's at, and now I have proof. If it was good enough for the universe.
So I've got to say, Mr. D, you don't like to micromanage, but I've noticed a lot of people have a tendency to throw you into the small details. Does it ever kind of annoy you when people say you're appearing on a cracker or taking a side in a football game?
Absolutely. I'm in no way details oriented. That's all Lucifer's realm. That's her domain.
The devil is in the details.
I'm a broad-minded kind of guy. I like to see the big picture. And we don't, you know, I don't know how many billions of tortillas there are every year put out. You know, eventually one of them is going to burn a pattern that looks like Jesus or Mary or something like that. It doesn't mean I had anything to do with that. It's just basic odds, you know, the luck of the draw.
Is it good PR, though?
Not really, no, because it just makes, you know, my people look like idiots.
Fair enough. I've made enough fun of that. I do have to ask, though, you know, one of my favorite authors and scholars says you have up to 9 billion names. Which one is your favorite?
Well, I always enjoy hearing, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God. Yeah.
Fair enough.
it's really music to my ears, because I know people are happy at that moment.
Unless they're on fire or something.
Right. That's true. Not crazy about Bob. That's one of the names people call me.
Yeah.
It's not very sophisticated, but I generally go by L around here.
Him.
Or right. Mr. Deity. Obviously, Mr. Deity is probably my favorite of all time.
So do you ever find yourself having to, I don't know, I think Zeus is kind of full of himself sometimes. Does he ever try to elbow in on your gig?
Zeus is so full of himself. Are you kidding me? He's talking about an arrogant... I mean, that guy, oh, boy, the stories I could tell you. First of all, he's the guy who will actually cough or sneeze in your backswing and then tell you, oh, no, it's pollen. Well, hello, we're God. I know that kind of thing doesn't affect us. But, you know, I let him get away with it because generally he's a good guy. So we have a good time playing and all of that kind of stuff. But, yeah, he's an arrogant. But you know what? People say the same thing about me. So, you know, what are you going to do?
Well, I suppose you could smite them.
Well, I can't smite Zeus.
Okay. Is there a reason you can't, or is it like a golf penalty?
A smiting?
Yeah.
Smiting, yeah. I mean, you can either take a drop or a smiting.
Okay.
That's pretty much God golf rules, yeah.
All right. Well, a few months ago, we started this project up, you know, a radio show for people who don't believe in you to have a thing to say and to, you know, sort of have a conversation. I never thought I'd ever be able to ask this question, but really, what do you, creator of the universe, think about shows like these?
I don't really have a big problem because, you know what, the atheist people... They don't know how to sell. They don't know how to sell, and they don't know how to fundraise. So they're never going to have the kind of numbers that cause me any real distress. And you know, the nuts on the other side. I mean, they can sell and fundraise like nobody's business. I mean, you saw Prop 8, right?
Oh yeah.
Happened here in California. That's the nuttiest group of people, basically, on the planet, aside from the Scientologists, the Mormons, and they kicked. They just killed you guys on it. So. I'm not really worried. You know, what you want. Say what you want.
Is the answer, Mr. Deity, that we need to get, like, Richard Dawkins burned onto some tortillas? Or, I mean, is that pretty effective? Yeah, that the people look crazy when they do it, but it seems to work.
That would probably help. But, you know, the problem with your groups is that you're kind of like free thinkers. You know, you don't coalesce. You don't have any kind of hive mentality. You're all kind of, you think what you want, and you don't really care about group cohesion. So you end up being these fragmented little groups who have their own petty concerns and never really come together on anything. So it's beautiful. I love it.
So maybe you could help us out with that, Mr. Deity. I was thinking, if you were able to harden Pharaoh's heart, maybe you could do a little of that with us. Maybe turn us into a bit of a hiveless, you know, hive mind sheep people as well. I mean, it seems to work.
That actually, first of all, let me just tell you, you're misinformed because I didn't harden his heart. He had hardening of the arteries. That's a completely natural thing that I had nothing to do with. I don't know where that rumor got started, but that's not the kind of thing I do. I'm too busy to do that kind of stuff. If I were going to do that stuff, I would go out and do the ribbon cutting.
I think the Egyptians did have a habit of mixing up the heart and the brain a little bit. So
they really did. You know what? A lot of people do.
Yeah.
That's a very common tendency to think that your heart and your brain are in any way connected. It's just not.
But I've got so many questions. For example, I mean, we've done, what, 9 shows at this point talking about Blaise Pascal and his particular wager. How do you... Now, weigh in on that for us. Let us know, is that what we should have been doing all along?
Well, that's really kind of the pussy way out, isn't it?
Yeah, I have to admit.
You go like, oh, well, you know, I may burn if I don't believe in this God, so I better just do it for safety's sake. You know, we had a guy come into my office once, who said, basically, I said the whole Savior's Prayer thing. I didn't really believe any of it. I was insincere and kind of mocking you when I did it, but I said, you know, I accept Jesus into my heart. I want to be saved. And we had to let him in because technically, you know, doubt and insincerity and that, you know, mocking are just sins, other sins, and Jesus is supposed to cover those. So it was a very clever trick. We had to let him in. And I think that's kind of a pretty way to go.
All right.
I'm sorry.
So it works, but you just don't care for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really wouldn't want to offend the chairman of the board. So many other questions.
So here's a question. Why don't you get a radio show, God? I mean, you don't want to have to appear on tortillas. You don't want to have to do ribbon cutting. It seems like that would be a really good way. I think you could pull at least Rush Limbaugh, Howard Stern type numbers.
Well, you know how some people don't have the face for television? I don't really have the voice for radio. So that's basically what that comes down to. Now, I could, you know, tweet that. There's a lot of technology out. And to do that, but I like to stay pure on that kind of thing, so not really my bag.
Okay. All right, and then one of my favorite comic book artists, Jack Chick. What's your opinion of him?
Who?
Well,
thank you.
Well, he clearly hasn't made appearances at bus stops then.
No, I haven't had a bunch of his work handed at me yet.
Sorry about that.
No, you've made my day.
You probably haven't made Jack Chick's day, though.
Don't mean to offend.
Well, if anybody could, I think you'd be the one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, they don't really care. Yeah.
So how does one get in on the ground floor of building the universe, if I may ask, if I may be so so blind or so obvious?
Well, you know, if you have a skill set that I don't either have or just don't have an interest in, that's one way to get in. Jesus got in on the ground floor because there was this whole stage of the plan that I just didn't have time to take care of. I don't know if you heard about it, but it involves a torturous death. I just didn't have the time. It's not that I couldn't or wouldn't have wanted to or was in any way chicken, but he got in on that one because, you know, like I said, I didn't have the time. So there's a good way, you know, he got a full partnership out of that. So he was pretty happy.
Oh, okay. Because that was something I was going to wonder. Is that how you get your walk-in papers in this business, or is that a promotion? Then now I know. I'm not certain really I want to be in this industry.
Some serious hazing there.
It's a tough industry. You know, you got to take some hard knocks.
So I'm kind of curious. If I wanted to build a skyscraper, at what point do I have to have my cutoff date? Because I don't want to get knocked down.
Just make sure it doesn't get all the way to heaven.
Okay.
Because that's what happened back with the tower. That's what ticked me off, is that I had already bought a piece of real estate up there, and they were trying to build in my area that I'd already purchased. That's not cool. You know, I mean, deeds mean something. All right. The law is the law. We're a universe of laws, and you don't try to build a tower in my vicinity. That's just not cool.
I told you, property values.
It's all about property values.
Property values are everything.
Yeah.
So you didn't go to like the zoning board. You said, you know, I'm just going to knock this thing down.
I did. They didn't. They didn't have the proper permits. I mean, come on. They didn't even they did no environmental impact study whatsoever.
None.
I can't abide that kind of thing. That's another cause for smiting.
Yeah,
there you go.
Everybody knows that.
So you have to worry about anyone putting up smokestacks or toxic waste dumps in heaven?
Not really. No, all the smoke basically stays down with Lucy. They have an incredible system down there for rerouting that crap. I don't know where it goes. It might go down to Earth, for all I know, or maybe just L.A. But
having been there, I could attest.
Yeah, I do like smoke to a certain extent. You know, certain smells. There's if you burn the flesh of a lamb, love that. That's a nice smell. Any kind of barbecue, except for human flesh. I don't care for that.
So many questions answered. I understand property values. I like barbecue. I think I'm going to be okay.
I think you are.
Thank you. All right. This is Ask an Atheist. I suppose Mr. Deity's loyal opposition. So you have a couple more questions?
No, I think that he saw into my heart and knew exactly what to say.
All right. Do you have anything you'd like to say to the assembled atheists out there?
You know, you keep at it. You crack me up. Funny stuff.
All right, this is Ask an
Atheist. You got no shot, but good luck. Yeah.
Thank you. Again, this is Ask an Atheist, Mr. Deity's loyal opposition. Our phone number is 253-584-1480, and we will be back in a minute.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of free thinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com, where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanists of Washington. .org.
The end of the world is now. Millions will disappear in the rapture, and those left behind will feel the wrath of God.
So who better to help those people feeling the wrath than an atheist? We don't believe in God, so we're pretty sure we won't get raptured out of here.
You can help by donating to Rapture Relief.
We'll use the money to help those afflicted during Armageddon.
And if for some reason this all turns out to be just another failed prophecy, your money won't be wasted.
We'll give it to Camp Quest, which teaches children critical thinking and science so they won't be duped by religious fables in the first place.
Learn more at rapture-relief.org.
A satirical benefit for Camp Quest, brought to you by Seattle Atheists.
If you enjoy the programming we create here on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship helps keep our show on the air and improve the quality of our broadcasts. Donors get access to exclusive Ask an Atheist content. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
This is Ask an Atheist, and with us is the man behind the universe, Brian Dalton. How are you doing today?
I'm the guy behind the guy.
Yeah.
They fit in Swingers. The guy behind the guy. they say there's always a good woman behind every good man, and actually this time it's just me. But by the way, many people on the phone can't even tell that I'm a man. I get that quite frequently. You know, it's a terrible thing to have a high voice.
No, I kind of understand. I have kind of a voice, and then I also don't have an Adam's apple, so I get that sometimes.
Yeah, I'm the same way. No Adam's apple. I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, well, sometimes you miss.
Perhaps a bad design.
There you go. Bad design, I'll screw you every time.
So we were kind of curious, what gave you the idea for Mr. Deity? What started the show in your head?
Very simple, a tsunami. The tsunami in 2004 that killed about 250,000 people, almost like, you know, pretty much in the snap of a finger. That's what inspired it. I had a family member who was Sri Lankan and who was connected and, you know, lost people and everything, and it was pretty devastating to him, and it hit home, and, you know, people were somehow able to find God everywhere in that thing, and to me it was just so disingenuous because, you know, there are a lot of ways to get God off the hook. You know, free will is one of the big ones and all that kind of stuff, but there are certain things where If you're an all-powerful, all-knowing, all-loving creator, you should be able to figure certain things out, like natural disasters are just purely gratuitous acts of suffering. You don't need them. Nobody's free will is affected. Nobody's, you know, natural law isn't affected. If we just never had them, you know, no one would be the wise. We'd all go along. We wouldn't immediately go, oh, yes, there must be a God because there's no natural disasters. It's like saying, you know, oh, there must be a God because none of us walks into a void and disappears. So I wrote the first episode of Mr. Deity and the Evil, and that was like early 2005.
Right.
And then I had done a movie with these two guys who were just incredibly funny together. The chemistry was great, and I thought they'd be interested in doing it. They weren't. They wanted to just stay away from it. So I put it out to every other actor I knew. Nobody was interested. And Jimbo, who plays Larry on the show, finally, we were coming home from a shoot, we did video production, and he said, we should just shoot this. And see, you play Mr. Deity, and I'll play Larry, and let's see how it goes. And we ended up shooting it three times. The one that everybody knows is the third incarnation of that, because I was so bad on camera. I'd never acted. I certainly had never acted and directed at the same time. So there was a bit of a learning curve there. I still hate my performance on that. There are certain performances now that I'm finally getting comfortable. I used to, when we shot one of these shows, I was just beside myself every time. I just hated me, and I thought the whole thing wasn't funny. But, you know, by the time you've done it 50 times on camera and then been editing it for 2 or 3 days, it just loses all the funny, and you have no perspective. But now I've just kind of come to trust it.
I can definitely understand that. I mean, Ask an Atheist has really been a by-the-seat-of-our-pants affair. I mean, we were originally on Scan, the cable access channel, and then we came to commercial radio, and it's been... I listened to our early work, even our early work here at KLAY, and I'm just like, God, I sound like that? Jeez, why am I even on the radio? So this is something that has some deep meaning to me, and I find it very telling that you chose humor as a response to the Boxing Day tsunamis. Whenever things go real bad for me, or a real tragedy happens, I do have a tendency to laugh and maybe make some off-color jokes, and for me, I know clearly, it's a coping mechanism, and so I do the best I can to not do it publicly so that I don't get set on fire. But is that part of a coping mechanism for you?
Absolutely. I have the worst case of gallows humor of pretty much anyone I know. I mean, I would say just the most awful things at the worst possible time.
Yeah.
Because that's the way I deal with it. You know, humor is pretty much, when something goes that bad, it's like, you know, look, I can either cry or I can either laugh.
Exactly.
But I hate crying. So, yeah. I do that. You know, we're still trying to get back to it. We just haven't had the time, but we did a short series called Word, which we never finished. The second episode of that, which was originally the first episode, but it was so dark that we couldn't put it up as the first episode, so we had to shoot another and put that up as the first. It was about a guy calling tell me that a mutual friend had committed suicide, and my response to that was just, okay.
Oh, jeez.
Ouch.
That is dark.
And then the whole thing turns into this thing where he's just offended that I'm just like, okay, what does that mean, okay?
Yeah.
Well, is there something else? Because he sets it up by telling him something awful happened, you know, terrible news, sit down, blah, blah, blah. And then he says, you know, whoever, I can't even remember the name, killed himself. Okay, and? And that's, you know, the funny thing is that was not my response to the situation, it was somebody else's, but when I heard it, I thought, that is so freaking funny. That is so funny.
Yeah.
I've never heard that. Somebody actually said, okay, and?
And? Yeah, where's the funny?
The bad news?
Yeah.
Are you going to get to the really bad news that I should be sitting down for? Because that one's not it. I don't care about him. The whole Mr. Deity series is basically to laugh at something, which I think in many ways is just so incredibly dark, because religion, I think, has just had a horribly negative effect on society for 2,000 years. Because it became really popular with those Romans. And, you know, it's one of those things where if you actually sit back and look at it, you can either have that two reactions. You're either going to cry or you're gonna laugh.
Yeah,
that's pretty much it.
That's always been it for me, and that's part of where my laughing, when I tend to laugh at inopportune times on the show, that's what it's coming from. Is if it's not funny, I'm gonna break down, and it's just gonna be terrible all the way through, and that's no good for anybody. And for me, it's
right.
A way to keep constructive, and I find it telling that the sort of the genesis, if you'll pardon the joke, of Mr. Deity started around the Boxing Day tsunamis, and it sounds like you were producing it through the Katrina affair.
Katrina hit, I think just shortly after that, right? What was that, 2006?
Yeah, 2005. I think 2006, yeah.
I think 2005,
yeah.
2006.
Yeah, there were a lot of bad things.
Yeah.
You know, that 2000, that odd decade, was there was a lot of crap going down there. And, you know, we've done episodes on just about everything, including 9/11, which I actually got a lot of heat for, because people still thought it was too soon, even though we did it, I think, last year or the year before, maybe 2009, 2010.
I was told 11 years, 7 months before it's too soon. So,
right. 7 months specifically?
Years. Yeah, I've got a countdown clock at my house.
When 9/11 becomes funny?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Sorry.
And, you know, back in the day, those times were shorter. I mean, you could joke about Lincoln like 5 years after.
Yeah.
So that's one of those things that's just getting, I guess that's inflation.
Wow. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. So what is it like being a comedian in the sort of the atheist visibility movement?
It's very cool, I gotta tell you. There's not a lot of people doing this with the kind of a wink and a smile like we do. There's a lot of very aggressive stuff out there, and that's great. I mean, that has to happen too.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in Malcolm, and I believe in Martin. You know, you take every route to get to where you need to get to, and some people will respond to the hardcore, you know, just hitting you in the face like Richard Dawkins or Christopher Hitchens will do.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people who, you know, the thing that gives me a lot of hope about this show is, I would say based on my email, I would say about 40% of our viewers are considered themselves believers and religious. They're not nuts.
Right.
They're not wacko. They're not the fundamentalists who get on TV, which is our image, I think, of a lot of religious people, because they, you know, they're the story. They're the man bite dog kind of thing. But the fact of the matter is, most people who are believers are not, you know, they don't want to go back to the Old Testament version of Sharia law, where homosexuals are being murdered and adulterers and those kind of things. They get some kind of spiritual satisfaction out of it, but they don't take the Bible literally, and they're okay laughing at it. They know there are goofy, silly problems here, and they're not all in.
Yeah, that's,
you know what I mean?
That's kind of gratifying to me, though, that in many ways they may believe, but they're in on the joke. And this is something we've said on the show a lot, that really most religious people, especially Christians, when they yell at us about biblical morality, are really better and more moral people than their books say they
should
are.
Be.
Yeah.
Well, thank heaven. Right?
Exactly.
You know what's funny is I do a tremendous amount of research for the show. I'm one of these people who needs like a billion hours of input to make one show.
Mm.
So I read like crazy. Well, this morning I was looking at something and I looked up Luke 19. And it's one of those things I turned to Amy. I said, you know, if people just read this without the kind of this holy kind of, oh, we have to revere this and let's be reverent. You look at it and you read it, it's just nuts. And just silly. There's in Luke 19, there's a point at which Jesus basically tells his disciples to go steal a colt. He's telling them to steal this horse so that he can ride into Jerusalem on the horse. And he tells them, if anybody says something to you, just tell them the Lord needs it.
Wow. So he sort of has a Richard Nixon take on things.
Pretty much.
If the Messiah does it, it can't be a crime.
I like it, though, too, because it sounds very Blues Brothers, because they were on a mission from God.
That's pretty much it. Go take this colt, and and it's just before the parable of the talent, where he gives each a talent, and if you make good with the talent, if you can multiply that talent while the Lord's gone, you get some big time. If you just hide it away, you're screwed, And then at the end of it, he says, anyone who doesn't want to follow the king, bring him in front of me, and we'll just kill him right here. And it's a sweet book, really. But
it really is. And some people are, their talent is taking things.
That's right.
So you got to use it.
Plenty. Your strengths.
Somewhere there's a football joke about the cult, but I can't find it.
Yeah. Right now. Wow. No, I'm reaching for it, and I don't see it.
So, Brian, if somebody wants to check out episodes of Mr. Deity, where do they go?
Well, there are a couple places. YouTube is one of our most popular. Most of the people connected to the show get the show via iTunes. You can just look up Mr. Deity on iTunes, and that's kind of nice because you can subscribe and then it just downloads to your computer. You don't even have to think about it. At MrDeity.com, we're right in the middle of revamping. We did this genius thing. If I had my all knowingness turned on, I could have foreseen this. But we redid the site about 2 years ago, just before the iPad and everything came out. We did it all in Flash, and it turned out to be a nightmare.
I actually looked it up. I was just to have some information in front of me. I have an iPad, and I just looked it up, and I'm like, it's a Flash page. I'm screwed.
Yeah, you're not gonna see anything basically. So we're trying to get that all revamped, and we're trying to get all the episodes up because people are having a problem seeing season two, which we did with Sony, both on Crackle and through iTunes. The links seem to have gone dead, and I'm not sure why that is. So season two is hard to come by right now, and we haven't been able to come to terms with Sony on seasons one and two for a DVD. So they're difficult to get out there. We're going to try to get them up on our own site within the next 3 months. We're wrapping up the fourth season, and I'll take a little hiatus, and then we'll put out a DVD of fourth season and try to get everything in order.
Cool. All right, one more question. Does playing God get to your head ever?
I don't think so. My wife does. So it's one of those he said, she said things.
Gotcha.
I just get to a point where I start saying, sweetie, you got to listen to me more. You really do.
Well,
I know what's going on.
Brian, thank you very much. I have to say that I met you down in L.A. when I went to see Hitchens and Harris speak with the conservative rabbis, and
Rabbi Wolfie,
I'd kind of taken a red eye down, and I was out of my gourd, and I was surrounded by people. It's like I think I know who some of these people are, but I can't play. And it was, and then I'm talking to you, and it's like, and I do this. I'm like, holy crap, yeah, you completely do. and thank you for having a conversation with me down in L.A.
Well, that was great. That was a great night. That was one of my hanging with Michael Shermer nights.
Yeah.
So, publisher of Skeptic Magazine. He's a great guy. He's going to be on the show again.
I saw the first episode that he was on.
Yeah. We've got a book coming out, which works perfectly because, he's got a book coming out, and it works perfectly because if you're following season four, we're just trying to figure out how to get a 6-day kind of universe going on, because everything that takes place in season four is before the creation, and we think we're going to do a 6-day thing, so he's having he's having Michael come in to tell him how to create a believing brain, which is the title of Michael's latest book. So it's perfect.
All right. Yeah. He was up in Seattle recently, and he did an intro spot for Ask an Atheist. And as far as I could tell, he was hanging out with the Seattle Skeptics guys for like 14 hours. I couldn't believe his
endurance.
Michael is one of the coolest people on the planet. I love
it. Very cool. All right. Brian Dalton is the man behind the universe. He is, he is Mr. Deity, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480, and we will be back after the break.
Did you know that not a single psychic or paranormal event has ever been reproduced?
Have you ever wondered about the effectiveness of faith healing, Reiki, or sports bracelets?
Was 9/11 an inside job, or is that all just another unproven conspiracy theory?
Come check out the Seattle Skeptics, a group focused on lively debates and a critical examination of pseudoscience, alternative medicine, and anything else that hasn't held up to the light of the scientific method.
Seattle Skeptics was created for those who require a higher bar of evidence than gut feelings or blind belief.
We're not contrarians or cynics, we just want to see the evidence.
And so should you.
Check us out at seattleskeptics.org.
That's seattleskeptics.org.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communication succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
And this is Ask an Atheist, the radio show. Our phone number is 253-584-1480. And back in the studio with us is Mike.
Hey.
And Kyle.
What's up?
And now is time for everybody's new, the new hotness of Ask an Atheist.
Yes, Scripture says what?
Scripture says what?
Where we dig through everyone's favorite holy books, whether it's the Bible, the Quran, Book of Mormon, Bhagavad Gita, and we take out the funny, the scary, and the just plain bizarre.
So what goodness have you brought for us today?
Well, moving outside of Christianity again this week, we are going to be looking at the Hadith, and if you're not familiar with that, it's kind of like Muhammad's little red book. It's the little sayings of the prophet. So kind of like when people are fans of Star Wars, and they go, oh, well, if George Lucas says it, it counts. They're kind of that way with Islam when it comes to the prophet Muhammad. So this is from the Hadith, Volume 4, Book 54, Number 516. The prophet said, if any of you rouses from sleep and performs the ablution, he should wash his nose by putting water in it and then blowing it out thrice, because Satan has stayed in the upper part of his nose all the night.
It's like a neti pot, really. You gotta get that Satan out of the sinuses.
Wash that Satan right out of your nose.
Yeah, I love the idea that Satan does linger in a particular body part and that you can get him out with basically a nasal spray.
Yeah, well,
that's it. You'd think he'd hide in a place that's much harder to get at. I mean, like your colon.
He's hanging out up there. It's close to the brain. He's trying to get to your thoughts.
I don't know. A lot of people seem to think that Satan hides out in the colon. Without not getting too much further into it.
But yeah.
Let's not get too much further into the colon.
All right. That way lies madness.
Yeah, yeah.
And FCC fines.
But I like the idea that that a nasal spray with three blowing your nose things can just get rid of it.
The three is important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really don't know what to say to this. I think for the most part, it stays for itself. Satan is in your nose. You got to wash him out.
Well, you know, might be good for your health. Might not be, but it'll apparently three nose blows a day will keep Satan away. So
what is it with three?
It's the fairy tale number.
It is. I mean, it's also the number for, I guess, summoning Beetlejuice.
Yes, that's true.
I think it's the number of starting hearts you get in Zelda.
Are we just listing threes?
Yeah,
now
we're just into threes.
It's usually the number of superhero movies you can make before it collapses.
I think that might be one extra in the case of Spider-Man. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And if you would like to send us a scriptural quote that you find very interesting, you can go to our website, askanatheist.tv, click the shiny candy-like button, and let us know what it is, and we'll put it on the show.
Yeah, definitely. It's, you know, don't limit yourself to just the holy book you're familiar with. There are so many.
Yeah.
And there is some funny stuff in all of them.
Without saying we're playing favorites, I think non-Bible quotes will get fast-tracked onto the show. Just saying.
True.
So, all right, why don't we do some emails? And I think we've been waiting to do this one. This one comes to us from Tim from the Netherlands, and it's about holy water. And he asks, what would happen when holy water gets diluted? I think there are these are the possibilities. One, it immediately loses all its power. This is bad for Christians because the moment water touches holy water, it needs to be blessed again. As water vapor is everywhere, this would happen almost instantly, and no actual holy water can exist. It's like negative matter.
I don't know if the vapor counts. That's interesting.
Yeah. Wow.
I think that's the same excuse that people use whenever you try to throw that, you know, like the movie Signs, where you have monster aliens that are immune to water, just walking through the air would kill them.
Right, right, right. And if you, you know, if you get a cold and you go through a vaporizer, do you have to blow the holy water out of your nose three times?
Yeah, I hope so. Why the three? is he like holding on, and the third one just dislodges him?
All right.
Three possibilities here.
Yeah, no, three possibilities
here. So possibility the second?
Possibility the second. The power also gets diluted. Now, if this is true and you dilute it loads of times, you can sell it as a homeopathic anti-cure. Add it to your enemy's food and watch them get cursed.
This is the one that I find probably the funniest. Because you could actually reverse that and create holy water in that same way. If you're not familiar with homeopathy, it comes from the ludicrous notion that like cures like. So if you want to cure somebody from arsenic, you have to take arsenic, and here's the second part, dilute it, and then pour it into more water, and dilute it more, and dilute it more, and dilute it more, and eventually it becomes basically a panacea.
Right. Well, I think one of my favorite examples of that in comedy is Mitchell and Webb look. They did homeopathic ER. It's a BBC comedy show you have to track down, but it's worth it for that particular bit. Now, part the third, again, everything's in threes. All water becomes holy. You could probably cure everyone in the world by dropping some holy water in the sea. And this is my favorite, because if it has some weird commutative property of holy water, that means that we, you know, start 70% holy, and you can't undo that. Anytime holy water has touched the ocean becomes holy.
The coastlines are completely holy.
Yeah, the water cycle is holy. Frogs are holy. Everything is holy. Who cares?
It seems like just a general water current. You have the rotation of the earth, the moon pulling the tides.
Yeah.
That's enough to dilute that holy water in there.
Katrina, that flood that completely destroyed the Mississippi river area, holy.
It sounds like you guys don't believe in holy water to me.
Oh, no.
Where would you get that idea? The fun thing about homeopathy, if you're not familiar, is that water, the idea that water has memory and it retains something, even though there's not a single molecule left, you've diluted it so much, is that it forgets all of the poo that's been in it.
And that's the thing, is this is one of the people like to say, that if magical qualities like this exist, we would be using them in industry. If water has memory, I would have water-based RAM in my computer.
Pharmaceutical companies could save so much money and create so much, you know, usable drugs.
Yeah.
Just by taking one drop of an incredibly rare or hard to make chemical and then just diluting it and just making it would be so cheap.
Right, right, right. So this is a question, and if you have an interesting application of holy water that we are able to read on the air, go ahead and send it to us at askanatheist.tv. And this is 253-584-1480 is our phone number, and we have another email.
This comes from Zafar from the internet.
Any relation to Zardoz?
I probably. I believe they're both floating stone heads that vomit rifles.
Okay.
All right. So Zafar asks, I was debating a theist, and he came up with the below-given argument. He said that the universe, matter, cannot be its own creator because a matter can be manipulated or changed by a human. So how can matter be a creator if it can be changed by human influence? How do you respond to this particular argument? According to Hawking, our universe can spontaneously create itself out of nothing.
Now, there are two significant flaws in this one. And the first one is the idea that humans cannot modify matter because it was created by a creator. Look at me, I'm modifying matter right now. I'm changing things. Ooh. You know, I mean, we're looking for the Higgs boson by smashing tiny particles at speeds near light.
Aren't I modifying matter every time I chew food?
Yeah, I'm sitting on this chair, I'm modifying matter. I'm smushing some cushions right now. We modify matter all of the time.
Smushing cushions.
I mean, we are creatures of matter, and in order to live, we must modify matter. That's what our digestive system does. The other flaw in this argument is a little bit more fundamental, and it's one that most religious people have, and that's that when they say the universe created itself, that's anthropomorphism. The idea there is that the universe was sitting there in its non-existence going, oh God, I'm bored. Maybe I'll just create myself. Or rather, oh God, oh me, because I'm the universe. We're not pantheists, we're atheists.
That's the really funny bit is I see a lot of people, and again, this is kind of like using this template where they have a God, they have a prophet, they have a holy book, and they think to understand someone else, you just swap out all the names. We right. don't use that template. We're not talking about nothing needs to have this sort of personage to choose to create. There's no intent that we see behind the creation of matter.
Yeah, I mean, if you say that, then then the universe is becoming God, and then we're no longer atheists.
Right? Right, exactly. The universe did not create itself. The universe was the universe expanded from nothing. To use the word "create," like religious people love to say, means that it was created by an entity. That is not what we believe, and that is not what the science suggests. Give us real evidence that it's otherwise, and then we'll have a conversation about the universe's inability to create itself. Otherwise, you're not fighting, you're not debating against atheism, you're debating against pantheism, which is a completely different thing.
Or arguing against a straw man. This is something I've seen people do when they argue against evolution, they argue against the Big Bang Theory, they argue against everything, which is they start by misrepresenting the thing that they're trying to dispute.
Yeah. So, if you just want to argue straw men, go find straw men to argue with. Thank you, Zafar. That was a great email. It's a subject of mine that, you know, the creations of the universe and eschatology, the beginnings and the end, are things that I love to discuss. Our next email comes from Brian the Great in Washington State. And he writes, I am a fellow atheist living near Seattle, Washington. My friend, who is also an atheist, introduced me to your show, and I greatly enjoy listening to it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
And he was at work the other day, and a few people were talking about religion. And he says, being an atheist, I stayed out of their conversation as I didn't want to start a fight. Gradually, the topic turned to evolution. One person said that there is no scientific evidence supporting evolution. Isn't there plenty of evidence supporting evolution?
I'd say so.
Yeah, there's a lot.
That's kind of what a theory is.
Right.
It's kind of like what all science is right there. It's evidence.
It's basically a question that has been largely settled. And of course, everything is open to new data. That's what science is.
Yeah.
But if you want good evidence, you want a good website that not only tackles the evidence for evolution, but also specifically addresses creationist claims, please check out talkorigins.org. It's a great website. It talks about everything from something from nothing, second law of thermodynamics, every single one of these canards that are thrown out by preachers or political pundits who start the conversation by misunderstanding the stuff that they claim to dispute. It's ridiculous because if your arguments are so strong, you don't need to misrepresent it.
But the Talk Origins people are the big. I mean, it used to be a Usenet group, and it's just the big people on the internet who have been discussing evolution for so long. They've heard it all. They have heard it all, and many of the arguments that you and I hear against evolution were formed to fight the people on Talk Origins.
So they evolved over time.
They
these
evolved
arguments.
Over time with gradual change.
How about that?
I'll throw the one out there is that bacteria that evolved to eat nylon, a substance which did not exist on Earth until the 1940s.
That's my favorite. That
yeah,
really is my favorite.
I love that one.
I do like the peppered moth being another one. It's a really good example to explain what it is. It isn't. We once had a phone call during our public access days where somebody misunderstood evolution to mean that we're all essentially shapeshifters.
Yeah.
And he asked, you don't think that you're evolving right now?
Right, right.
Aging.
That was the caller that said the finite state machine when, you know, as for the flying spaghetti monster, and I just sort of played with it thinking that he was making a joke, and then I got a million emails saying, it's flying spaghetti monster, while Becky was with the flying spaghetti monster in Seattle.
That was a weird phone call because it was one of those jokes where the punchline never came, and we gave him way too much credit.
Yeah, but he called back, and it was really neat, and the next time he called back, he's actually continued the conversation a bit. So.
Oh, I mean, he was nuts. He was a nice guy.
I wouldn't go nuts. He just had he was an atheist, and he had some weird ideas about how evolution worked, and we just needed to discuss them.
As in, you know, wrong ideas.
Well, weird, wrong, sure, whatever.
Guys,
you know, shapeshifter
like
is wrong.
All right, our next email comes from Dorian Gray, and I think I read about his picture somewhere. How would you explain the logics of atheism to a Christian? Hello, I've been listening to the podcast. We're also a radio show, for the record, and now I wanted to, well, participate a bit. I tried to explain what I think about religion and its God to a Christian, and apparently when I said it is illogical to argue there is a creator that doesn't need a creator, many Christians just couldn't understand it. I gave him or her my effort to explain what it truly means, but nonetheless it always concluded fruitless. Like me and many atheists, we just agree and understand what it to mean. How would you, or what would you say to Christians about this simple logic?
I usually take the Socratic method on this. When somebody throws this argument, this is the first cause argument. I forget what the official name. I don't tend to use the official verbiage for this stuff. But if you throw out the idea that all things that exist need a creator, and then you say this creator is X, it really does beg the question, who created your creator?
Mm-hmm.
That's usually the way I throw it out there. But I think the other thing, Dorian, is that you can't reason with some people because they've decided they're not willing to reason, that they're just repeating something like a parrot, and they're not interested in actually having a discourse where they're willing to change their mind.
Yeah.
I think that it becomes kind of pointless to argue with these people unless you have an audience.
It seems like a pretty straightforward argument, and if they're not willing to accept that, then...
I really don't know how, because there really isn't a magic argument that we're trying to come up with that will answer every claim that will change this person's mind, Dorian, because changing your mind, there's a bit of willpower involved in that. You have to be willing to change your mind.
If I may offer a counterpoint, I would say don't even argue with this in front of people, because people are not in debates. People are not swayed by facts and evidence. They're swayed by emotions. And these people, since they don't have to pay attention to facts or ideas or the truth value of their arguments, they can spend all of their time making their arguments seem as sharp as possible. And this is something that a lot of people who debate evolution have to face, is that the guy on the side of creation, his job is to make himself sound as truthful as possible saying anything. He could be talking about how radium cures cancer and you can use it as face paint, and he can make it sound truthful. That's his job. On the other side of the debate, you've got the person whose job it is to actually find the truth, and they're not interested in how they're saying it. They just want the evidence and they want the truth. Who's going to sound better in that debate?
Well, it depends on how dumb both sides are, really. I've seen this exact question come out. This was a real example of a debate where both sides were kind of dumb, was that Nightline debate where the Rational Response Squad were debating Kirk Cameron and Ray Comfort.
Yeah.
And they actually said, well, if, you know, God always existed and he's eternal, why can't the universe be eternal? And there was this deadening silence.
Right.
And the moderator actually turned to them and said, Ray Comfort, do you want to answer this? And they went, no.
Like, that's an option.
You saw that deadening silence as they won their point. A lot of people saw that deadening silence as you guys just stepped in something bad. They didn't have to refute it.
Well, if they had this clearly uncomfortable look on their face.
Yeah.
And that right there, to anyone watching the debate, even if you have the sound turn off, just goes, wow, that guy just got humiliated.
I was in Arizona when I heard it, and I could tell you that's not... Most of the people I talked about the debate with did not see it that way. I'm telling you what I experienced. It's anecdotal.
For me to imagine, but
yeah.
I'll take your word for it.
I can't imagine any crowd taking Ray Comfort's side. I mean, I would like to believe that...
You know who Ray Comfort is.
See his beautiful
I know who Ray Comfort is.
That's the difference. Most people don't.
Yeah.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We'll take one quick email, and then we'll get on our way. This comes to us from Linda from South Milwaukee, Wisconsin. What are your suggestions for responding to and challenging the ubiquitous, everything happens for a reason argument? I hear this often. Sometimes it carries an obvious God-related meaning. Other times it's more of an assertion of a generalized supernatural nature of the universe.
Yeah. Everything happens for a reason. I mean, it depends on if someone's saying it to you to be a jerk or if they're just trying to, you know, say, like, what a coincidence. I mean... If I miss my bus and someone goes, everything happens for a reason, and I'm in a bad mood, I might give them a smart aleck answer, you know?
Yeah.
I guess that this, I would answer this with what I think is the most important question that human beings have ever come up with. How do you know this? I think that there's a real fear that human beings have of saying, I don't know, or admitting I don't know.
Yeah.
And I think that they fall back on these God of the Gaps arguments, which is they just cram some assertion into these holes in their knowledge.
Right.
Because there's nothing scarier than just not knowing. But there really isn't. That really isn't scary at all. I think that there's something I mean, there's humility in it, but I think there's something very honest about just saying, you know what, I don't know, and sometimes things just happen. I think it's actually much more comforting to say that sometimes things just happen. If there's a car wreck and somebody dies in a plane crash or somebody gets cancer, nobody chose to have that happen to somebody.
Well, they're using a truism to inject a non-truism. Everything, you know, everything happens for a reason. Yes, effect follows a cause. Physics says that's true.
It's another way of saying this is all according to God's plan.
Yeah,
using the G word and outing yourself.
What they're saying is that everything happens for an intended cause. That this is an attempt to inject meaning into the universe where there is none. This is the secret. This is, you know, a million, if you think about it, it'll happen. This is Crowleyan magic. This is just a bunch of weird stuff.
Yeah.
And, well, no. If there's no mind behind the universe, everything might happen for a reason, but that doesn't mean that reason is meaningful. I mean, we were talking about water before. Sometimes the water cycle gets out of phase, and we get a bunch, you know, and there's a lot of extra sun or whatever meteorological stuff happens for a reason, and we get a bunch of hurricanes or you get a big flood. There was a reason, yeah. Something happened in the ecology.
And there was a cause.
Yeah, there was a cause, but that doesn't mean it happened, you know, that somebody somewhere in a box
made a choice to,
yeah, I'm going to flood the crap out of the United States this year.
That's the thing I find so frustrating about this, is that people are afraid to just simply say there are things that happen that are out of my control. That kind of scares me sometimes, but there's really nothing I can do about it. To think that you're along the line, okay, don't worry, this is just the scary part of the movie, and then the good guys will win in the end. I'm sorry, life just doesn't work that way. And sometimes we do learn the answers that fill in those gaps of the things we don't know, and every single time we do, those religious assumptions have always been wrong.
And that's the thing, is that when you stop going with the fairy tales, it gives you an opportunity to find the truth and then eventually do something about it.
And when you learn that truth, there isn't this huge barrier to you learning it. You don't have this ideological block where you have to go through this painful self, feeling when it's like, oh, okay, I've been told that this group of people is bad. Then I meet somebody that doesn't meet the stereotype.
Right.
And now I don't have to go through this agonizing process where my ideology is fighting my personal experience and my own moral intuitions.
Right, right.
This is crap. So here's an idea. Don't pretend to know things you don't know. Just say, I don't know, and let your experiences and your own moral intuitions figure it out on your own.
Anything to add to that?
No.
Yeah.
Mike's eloquent as always.
I like it. I just said, you know, once you give up the fairy tales, it lets you find out the truth, and stuff can happen. Well, Mike, thank you very much for coming in again.
Good to be here.
Having a chat again, Kyle. It's great to see you, as usual.
Thank you very much.
And that's all the time we have today. My name is Sam Mulvey, and with me was Mike Gillis and Kyle Hepworth. Our production assistant was Rebecca Friedman. Our call screener is Joe DiStefano. And thank you to Mr. Deity, Brian Dalton. And Brian Dalton, the man behind the universe and the man behind the universe. Our music, as usual, is by Chris Coleman. This is an NEDM Media production, and we will see you guys next week. We're going to make a quick stop at the office, but we're moving, so it won't be too long. Get you there.